course of many years, he was in this business of ours, in the radio business, and certainly made quite a mark for himself as one of the great producers and creators for the radio industry many, many years ago. But since then, he has branched out, done so many other things. A lot of you probably know of him because of an incredible book that he wrote. For those of you who have wondered about or been involved in the out-of-body experience, called Journeys Out of Body. He also has done a great deal of work in this matter of the left brain and the right brain, and how to sleep and how to program sleep. And, well, we'll just talk about how to get you to sleep tonight, how to get you to use your brain, how to get you to become much more creative about everything, every aspect of your life. And certainly we want to talk about the out-of-body experience too. And on the line for that is Mr. Robert A. Monroe, the Monroe Institute. Bob, welcome to the Open Mind Show tonight.
Bill, it's a pleasure to be here. It's a little later where I am, of course, and it's Saturday night, and a lot of people are out and around, and some are going to bed, so here I am.
Well, it's Sunday morning where you are. You're talking to us from Virginia, I think.
That's true.
I appreciate you getting up on an early Sunday morning to join us out here in California on a late Saturday night. But we do have quite a group that are listening to you. We're very happy to notice in the latest ARB, and this is something you'll be interested in, Robert, is that this show has the highest single rating in its time period in the country.
Well, that's very remarkable.
And one of the reasons is certainly not me, but it is the subject matter that we get into and the guests that we have on board, and you're adding to that.
I think it was I listened to your introductory remarks, and one of the things that amused me a great deal, that back in 1955, I proposed a talk radio system that we called companionate radio.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it didn't sell among the network affiliates.
Well, now it's working very well.
It is indeed.
As you know, we originate the talk radio programming here at KABC in Los Angeles. That's heard now at about 60 stations around the country.
Mm-hmm.
And that's growing.
And very good.
We send it up on satellite, and they have a down leg at the stations, and so we're everywhere.
Very good.
Well, we've had so many questions about the out-of-body experience. Bob, let's deal with that for a while before we get into the other things. I know that you have done a great deal of investigation into that. We have talked about it before here on these Saturday nights, and I've come to find out here in Los Angeles, Bob, that everybody in L.A. goes out of body but Bill Jenkins.
Well, now, I can rectify that very quickly. According to the latest studies that we have and others, you do go out of your body. The only thing is that you don't remember it.
Uh-huh.
And you achieve this little phenomenon when you go to sleep at night. And our premise is these days is that everyone does this. They simply don't remember it.
Well, I'm talking about those that take the wild and wonderful trips here, yon, and everywhere. You hear some incredible stories about people who move around with a great deal of freedom on the physical plane. Some of them that go even beyond the solar system.
Yes.
And then some that move into what may well be described as the other side, or another realm altogether that we're not totally familiar with.
We like to call those other energy systems.
All right.
Or other realities.
Have you ever gone out of body, Bob?
Have I?
Uh-huh.
Well, I stopped logging them officially. They're somewhere past the 2000 mark.
So you have gone.
Oh, gracious, yes. This has been... this started for me back, back in about 1958, and got me entangled in a whole area of which I was totally unfamiliar. And my first adventures in it were totally involuntary, and to me at the time, very, very frightening.
What is frightening about them?
Well,
is it the unknown?
Fundamentally, yes. I went through all the usual things at that time anyway, thinking that perhaps I had a brain tumor, that I was developing some type of psychosis. And after about various physiological runs with doctors and with psychiatrists and so on, the best that anybody could say was that I was totally sane, but I was simply performing what they called at that time conscious dreaming. And, of course, as I say, that was in 1958. And being unable and being unsatisfied with the answers that I obtained from, say, conventional scientific sources and various psychological friends, the best advice that I could get was that, oh, why don't you go to India and study under a guru for about 10 years, and then you'll understand the whole thing. But being much of a Western motif in my mental set, I also having a family and a mortgage on a house, I couldn't see how to do that. So I took an alternate route and began to use some R&D funds that we had in a company to form our own series of experimental research programs, and those gradually evolved until finally, as one does, it became the major part of my life.
Well, you've written a much touted book for those that are into this matter of the out-of-body travel, Journeys Out of Body. Who's your publisher on that?
That's published by Doubleday.
Doubleday?
Yep. It's been out for about 10 years, and I can say it was published about 1970, and then an updated edition came out in about, 78, I guess. And it's now, let me see, I think it sold more in 1982 than it did in 1970. It's published in about 5 or 6 languages.
Could it be that people are beginning to become aware of this new reality that is around us that we have so often put down or would not let our belief systems accept that this is going on, and they want to find out more about it?
Oh, I think that's one of the most remarkable things in this last 20-some years. From my own point of view, anyway, in, say, 1958 or 1960, and this was a very unacceptable subject in public matters, even on late radio. And as a result, I was somewhat of a closet explorer, as it were. I felt very sensitive that I'm head of a large corporation at that time, and quite concerned that the board of directors of that corporation might find out this secret thing that I was doing. And when I look at that today in 1983, it's amazing. If someone had told me in 1960, for example, that I would give a talk at the Smithsonian on out-of-body experience, I would have laughed at them. I'd said the public would never accept it. But it's been massive changes in 20 years, Bob.
Well, as I mentioned to you before, everybody in L.A., I think, goes out-of-body, as you'll hear from the callers. I remember the first show I did on this, Bob, that I was amazed. I didn't know that such a thing happened, in fact. And so the show has always been a learning experience for me as much as it has been for the audience, I think. For the audience teaches me a great deal. But not only do people go out of body, there were so many people were calling in and saying that they were meeting people out there that they knew.
Uh-huh.
And then the next day they would confirm their simultaneous experience, and that would prove to be so.
Well, statistics built up by various people in the last 8 or 9 years indicate that on a worldwide basis, somewhere between 25% and 30% of the world population consciously remember an out-of-body experience, at least one. And so the point of acceptability is, I say, a lot of people have come out of the closet.
Well, let me ask you something. If you have seen this definite separation of the physical and the etheric body, or the consciousness of the body from the physical body, what has that done to your own spirituality?
Well, first of all, if you say what has it done now or what did it do originally, I can give you 2 points of view.
Let's have them both.
The first early incidents of it made me feel that I was dying, and that I was in no mood to die at that particular moment, and desired to be nothing more than scramble back into my physical body. 20-plus years later, all I can say is that the out-of-body experience confirms and gets you past the belief system to a knowledge system that physical death is nothing more than a transition. It's a natural thing that you do survive physical death. And that survival has nothing to do with your religious beliefs or anything else. It's as natural as being born. And I think that's the most profound thing that would alter anyone's life, to get past the belief in folk stage, but know this. And I think that's how I feel. It's a piece of knowledge that one picks up along the way.
Can we talk in just a moment about some of the things that you experience when you go out of body and where the wanderings will take you?
Oh, yes. Go ahead.
All right. You're spending a Saturday night with the Open Mind program. I'm Bill Jenkins, and my guest is Robert Monroe, who has served in a number of capacities as Vice President of Programs and Director of the Mutual Broadcasting System, Incorporated. He's now the head of the Monroe Foundation. He is an author of one of the finest books out on the out-of-body experience, Journeys Out of Body. I'm speaking to a heavyweight, and you'll have an opportunity to talk to Bob about the out-of-body experience. We have some other things to talk to him about, too, tonight. On KABC, I'm Bill Jenkins. Experience, Bob, when you go out, and what can people look forward to whenever they get into that situation?
Well, it depends, again, I think, upon your own mental set, Bill. Most people, and I say most, who deliberately attempt such a state, find that they get into what we call a fear barrier. Some of the bravest characters that we have encountered in our laboratory work come in a very strong macho point of view, but when it comes down to the actual fact of performing something, they begin to get this fear barrier. And it's a very simple thing. The fear barrier is the barrier that is the greatest obstacle in any attempt at achieving the out-of-body state. We have developed systems to get around it, but fundamentally, I think that's the biggest thing that people encounter is in their initial attempts at fear.
Well, I've had a different experience myself. I have tried to go. I've been taught a couple of techniques, and I get into an altered state of consciousness. I feel a rushing going on, and I get so excited that I wake up.
Well, that's another one, yes.
And then I get really, really angry about that because I wanted to try this out.
Yeah, excitement is one of the things that you get so excited. A lot of people that, oh, hey, I'm really doing this strange and wonderful thing. And they get so excited that it pulls them right back into the physical state.
So I've just given up on it. One of these days, it'll happen.
Well, talk to some of our people on the West Coast. Perhaps they can help you.
Paul and some of them are sitting here saying, oh, you shouldn't do that. Going to have to huddle with them after this is over, I suppose. What will you find out there?
What will I find?
What will most people, what can they, do they float around in their own environment or do they go into other realms?
Well, the first thing that comes that is usually a great surprise to most people is that they don't find anything. They just find a big black nothingness. It's a dimensional blackness is the best way to put it. Not a typical type of blackness. You have a sense that it has immense depth. And after that first one or two times like that in reaching this big black state, you either get bored with it or say, well, there's nothing to it. And then you begin to learn to perceive in this blackness, as it were. And some people do it very instantly, but others, I'm talking about in the systematic approach to it. They have to learn to begin to perceive in this other state. Once they do this and learn that they perceive with something other than eyes and ears and the normal sensory input, and then they begin to assemble their consciousness and their ability to perceive there, and from then they're on their way.
Where are some of the places?
Well,
I've heard some strange stories.
Well, they're it's as strange as you want it to be. As a matter of fact, you can be very prosaic and travel, let's say, from here in Virginia to the Los Angeles area, and home in on a direct spot, or more preferably a person. It's a lot easier to go to a person than it is a place.
Uh-huh.
And you can do this, but it's after about the 25th time or something, it gets rather boring. This is one of our greatest problems in experimentation, because if you think you realize that you're moving through gray areas and rather dull places, and all of a sudden as you're traveling along up above somewhere, you see this beautiful bright light. You say, what's that? Well, once you go into that bright light area, it's the natural place. It's like coming out of clouds and into sunlight, as it were. And once you go visiting that other natural habitat of this, what we call the second body, and you get into this second state where the second body's natural home happens to be, it's very hard to keep them down on the farm after they seem to leave. And to get in, keep them in these very prosaic, systematic experiments is awfully hard because they're so attracted to this other area. And that other area is an entire vista of reality systems that are often very difficult to come back and translate in time, space, words, and phrases, or even pictures.
Do you find others up there?
Well, oh, yes. It depends on where you go and what you look for.
Mm-hmm.
An illustration. And that if you wish to visit someone who, let's say, a quote, dead father, that's possible. You may not particularly enjoy being there where your dead father is, and that doesn't mean he's gone to some wicked place. It means that his environment is there is not quite suitable for your particular energy system. You tend to be comfortable where you belong as against where, you know, say, your father might belong. You can do this and do it on a temporary basis, but you don't feel comfortable staying there.
Are there any kind of rules and regulations that you feel compelled to follow whenever you're in that place?
The best way I can say is that the rules and regulations have really no bearing on what we like to call the local traffic rules of here on Earth, as it were. The rules of behavior are vastly different and do not particularly follow the same pattern in a particular state. In other words, it says our rules of behavior are here on Earth are entirely different, say, even in Los Angeles, as they are different, say, in Maine. Or, to take an extreme, you go to the middle of China, where rules of behavior are entirely different in a remote hamlet than they are on Santa Monica Boulevard.
Can you leave the solar system?
Yes, we've done a lot of exploration like that, it becomes kind of amusing trying to find. We sketched out long and detailed vectors, as it were, beyond or after the initial solar system exploration, as it were. And we used to send teams of people out on these kinds of things. It got very exciting, except that we could not find any intelligent life. And we kept the eternal search for intelligent life. And when we did find it, we found that we had no means of communication, and that was one of the problems.
But you did find intelligent life.
Yes, we did a number of times, found that our problem was communication.
Have you checked the moon out real closely?
Yes, with reasonable certainty, yeah. What do you want to know about the moon?
Well, we hear all kinds of stories, Bob, about a lot of things going on up at the moon. What have you people found out?
Nothing. We haven't really gone over every inch of the moon because it's, again, kind of boring. You got to remember that it sounds rather crude or odd that this can be boring, but if you do this hour after hour and you see hour after hour of a series of craters, it's not very exciting.
Mm. It sounds to me like it would be extremely exciting.
It would be the first or the fifth or the tenth time, but after that, there's a lot more fun things to do.
Okay. Are you ready to tackle some of the callers? They're stacked up here about 45 deep, it looks like.
Oh, yes, certainly.
And we'll get to the callers in just a moment. You're on Open Mind tonight, and our guest is Robert A. Monroe. He's the head of the Monroe Institute. Open your mind.
Hi, it's Damien.
Yeah.
Mr. Monroe, I read your book, and as a child, I used to have spontaneous astral projections. I felt like when I was going to sleep at night, I would be like, say, 20 or 30 feet above my body, and it would only last like 10 or 15 seconds. But as like a teenager, I'm like 22 now, but like around the 17, 18, 19 area, when ever I'd have like emotional, you know, problems or something, you know, things wouldn't be going too good, I found that it was easier at those times to project out of my body. But a thing happened to me when I was 19 that has since, you know, made a block that I'm not able to project anymore. And it was that I never projected like more than like say 20 or 20 feet above my body, not going to the moon like you and stuff like that. But one time I felt like I was 20 or 30 feet, but that I was almost like going to be rapidly projected upwards. And I was so frightened that I came right back into my body. And since that time, I haven't been able to in the slightest project at all. And I was wondering, you know, what that could be from, because I heard you mention this fear factor thing. I'm concerned. I'm afraid that sometimes, like, another spirit could enter my body, that could be part of it, or that I might not be able to find my way back. And I was wondering if you could shed any light on this.
Well, in terms of shedding light, this is, of course, a part of that fear barrier that I was indicating. It does take a great deal of courage, as it were, to when you feel you're going shooting upward, to simply let go and see what happens. We have, of course, a funny story in the trade, as it were, that nobody has died from being out of body. And, of course, they can say, well, nobody came back and reported it, but... but it is, that is the fear barrier that you're encountering. The next time that happens, if you just simply let go and let it happen with a calm knowledge that you'll get back. We have systems that help you do that and help you relieve yourself from that worry. One of them is we install in people, first of all, a panic button. It's our own jocular way of calling it, so that if you want to get back at any given time, you can push this mental panic button.
Right.
When you do this, you return to your physical very quickly and very automatically. The second thing is, of course, that, again, remember, we've been playing around with this in terms of developing methods over the last quite some time now. And the second one that we express concern about, and that is meeting antagonistic other beings, as it were, we've developed a few little systems that handle that, too. And I must say that in the last 2,000 plus, when I'm probably a year late in my quote, experiments with different people, I can't remember meeting any of them ever encountering any disagreeable person, a disagreeable spirit, or a frightening spirit. So the system works pretty well.
Well, I've heard stories, Robert, that you have to be careful because while you're gone, someone may try to take over your body. Is there any? Have you found any evidence of that?
No, not in our work anyway. We've heard people express this fear, but once they understand the mechanics of it, the parameters that set up, then they realize that that's no problem. They can just, anybody attempting to do this, they simply pat them on top of the head and say, go play elsewhere. It's that simple.
Okay, David, does that help you?
Okay, thanks very much.
All right, thank you for your call. We have Ann on the line. Ann, what's on your mind?
Yes, hello. I've not had this experience.
You're in the club.
And I find it very intriguing. And I've written down a few questions. Essentially, I know people who have had this and who are highly reliable, and I want very much to believe that this is true because it's very exciting. At any rate, are there techniques? Is there an optimum personality that is more able to achieve this particular experience? Also, another question, do you feel specifically a different kind of peace as a result of knowing that you can do this? And when you go out on these trips for any length of, for these, to the moon and to wherever, do you age while you're out there in proportion to the time that you are, your body's happening here?
Great mistake. You
want to
go back and start with the first question?
Got a bunch of them there, Ann. We've got to take them on.
What was the first one again, Ann?
Is there an optimum personality that is more accessible for this?
We have a number of different types of profiles. There is not any such thing as an optimum personality that can perform this. There is indeed... different results for different types of personalities. One of the things that we found is that people who have worked in different types of belief systems have to sometimes unload those belief systems a little bit before they can get into these different states of consciousness. And that's the best way to define it.
Mm-hmm.
There is no such thing truly as an optimal personality. There is a thing, however, that we do restrict people who have been very deeply into drugs. We do not work with them in our various experimental programs.
Oh.
The reason is that often the systems we employ will reintroduce various types of altered states created by drugs, and they're not conducive to the type of conscious control that we require.
Uh-huh.
What's the next one?
The next one is, do you feel, as a result of your experiences having happened involuntarily, and now through your research, have you discovered a new sense of peace?
Oh, very much. I think it's and peace is perhaps an understatement in the sense of what peace means. You have a great deal higher joy of living physically, strangely enough, because that every shadow of death is not the same as it was before.
Okay.
You can live fully here, and that doesn't mean that you take unnecessary chances or anything like that, but you realize much more the purpose for living here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is a peace. That is a peace, and I think a joy is another word that better fits.
Okay, Gina?
Was there another?
I think that's Ann.
Yes, it is. Gina, just the one more question is that when you go on these travels that are so far away, which would take us months and years and so on, do you age in your astral traveling to other planets and other galaxies in the way...
Do I age?
In other words, is it that you would be away for a few minutes, an hour, a year? For your body here on Earth.
Oh, your body does not age, or it does no more than it would in the normal real-time sense. Let's say if you were out of your body 5 minutes, for example, your physical body would age 5 minutes.
So it takes 5 minutes to go to the moon and back?
Well, no. Oh, it takes maybe 5 seconds. In that same 5 minutes, you got to remember that you're existing then in this other state, in this other state of consciousness. You're dealing with a state where time does not exist for you. So in that 5 minutes, you can have the equivalent of 50 years of experience. That will help.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Anne, thank you for those questions. You're spending Saturday night on Open Mind tonight at KABC. I'm Bill Jenkins, and with me is Robert Monroe of the Monroe Institute. We're talking about the out-of-body experience, and Robert and his group have done a great deal of research into it, and we'll find out more about that. Get back to your calls in the book some time ago, but it's an excellent one on the subject called Journeys Out of Body. He's the head of the Monroe Institute, and they're doing a great deal of study and concerted research in this particular area, this phenomenon, this part of the reality of this world that we live in that so many of us are not used to, or maybe have a little bit of trouble getting it past our belief systems. Bob, you know, we quite often talk about on this show this little reality box that we all have that is pretty well shaped by our religions and what we've taught and what we've experienced in life, and that forms a window through which we view reality, this reality box. And quite often it's not a window at all, it's a little peephole, and we're trying to stretch your reality box tonight to let you know that there is such a thing as the out-of-body experience that goes on. Let's talk to Gina and see what's on her mind. Gina, welcome to Open Mind.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello, Bill.
Huh?
And hello, Mr. Monroe.
Hello there.
Now, I had an experience when I was approximately, I would say 4. I could project myself. Now, I know that this sounds really crazy, but it sticks in my mind just as if it was last week.
Go ahead and spit it out,
folks. Okay. I could project myself into my mother's head and see her looking at me and speaking to me. Sometimes when she would be saying something I didn't particularly like, or if she was telling me something that I had to do, or something that was very important, and when she was looking right at me, I could go from my head, my brain, right into her head, brain, mind, and see myself. You know, she was much taller than I, and I could see her looking down upon me. And no longer was I in my own body, but I was in hers. And I could, no longer was I myself, but I was her talking to me. Now, one time I told her about this, and I was really, chewed out. And my mom said, that's absolutely impossible, that cannot be. And from then on, I could no longer do it. And
you had her program you, didn't you?
Yes, I really did. And what I would like to do is know how I could do this again, because I know I was not schizophrenic or crazy. I was a very happy, little kid. And I would like to know, first of all, what is this? And second of all, how could I do it again?
Well, I've had the feeling my wife has done that to me for about 25 years. Well, let's see what Bob has to say about that.
Okay.
All I can say is that you must have been a beautiful baby, but also a very intrepid one for your mother. What would a poor mother do when a child reported that? She did what she could only advise, and that is worry about what is happening to her little 4 or 5 year old daughter.
They kind of laughed, and they didn't think I was schizoid or crazy or anything like that. But I think that I was born in 1949, and I think at that time things were not as advanced as they are today as far as parapsychology and things of that sort.
Not as aware.
Right.
Bob, do you have any...
I don't have any particular advice for you. You can, there are ways that you can reopen that if you so desire. And I think the important thing is that for you to think about if you were able to do this and do it at a very conscious, willful way, what would you do then? I think this is a philosophic question that comes up so often. A parallel to that on a different approach, one of the physicists who has been doing research with us for quite a while,
mm-hmm.
and this is about 6 or 7 years ago, his little 4-year-old boy came in who was quite precocious, incidentally, and he was waiting for his father to come out of a given research thing, and I was sitting there, and he very shyly looked at me, and he said, "I do what you and Daddy do." I said, "What's that?" He says, "I float." How do you do that? And he says, "Well, I'm in my bed in my room and I float." And I says, "What do you do when you float?" He says, "Oh, I float out of the room and down the hall and out the front door and to see what's going on outside." And he went to describe what he was, that type of thing. But he used it in a very practical way. He would float to see his sisters in the bathroom, so if he had to go, he could get in. It was very interesting.
Do you have any experiences or research where people have projected themselves inside the body of another person, as he was telling us about?
Yes, particularly into other reality systems. We have not done much in this particular time, space continuum, in terms of getting into other people. I don't know why we haven't, except that it doesn't seem particularly appealing to us.
But what I always wonder about, if Owen and Mother had not told me that that was impossible, I just, if I had someone that had more knowledge about these types of things, I just wonder what I could have gone on to do.
Well, that's speculation at this point in time.
It's not true.
Yeah.
But you can do it.
You can still do it.
Oh, great. Well, I'm going to start to try, because sometimes I have flashes of, very strange things where I know something is going to happen, and I have a feeling that I do have a, you know, a sense about things that may happen in the future, and I have a feeling about things that...
Well, you know, there are a number of books on that, Gina, that you can get into. Certainly you can get Bob's book. It's available around.
Oh, great.
And open up those doors and see what you can do.
Wonderful.
I would suggest that you write us and tell us about yourself, and if there may be some way that we can do something of interest for you or with you in that such way.
What is your address, Bob, in case anybody wants to contact you?
Look, I have a pen and pencil here.
Okay. All right.
It's very simply Monroe Institute.
Monroe?
Yes.
Hey, Gina, don't repeat it. Just listen.
Okay.
Faber, Virginia, that's F as in Frank. A, B as in boy, E-R, Virginia, 22938.
Okay, Monroe Institute, Faber, Virginia, 22938. Now, if you missed that, Lita will have that for you on Monday morning. Gina, thank you very much for your call. We're going to let you go and get on to somebody.
Thank you so much, dear.
Okay, thank you. You're with Bill Jenkins on Open Mind tonight. Robert A. Monroe is our guest. We're talking about the out-of-body experience, and I believe we have Barbara on the line. Barb?
Hi.
Yeah. What's your problem?
Mr. Monroe, what a pleasure to talk to you, to listen to you. You are such a thoroughly respectable person, and in this business, that's such a joy to hear. I have a couple of questions for you, sir. The first being, with a great deal of meditation work, which I have done, would I be safe in attempting this sort of thing myself? I should say by myself.
Oh, yes. If you've done a great deal of meditation, it's a very simple step from a deeply meditative state to these other states of consciousness. It's neither difficult nor dangerous to perform by yourself. I think once you set certain, I don't say rules, but certain procedures, is the best way. Nothing dangerous.
Is it kind of a natural thing? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, it is. It's, as I stated somewhere back in the beginning, that the out-of-body state in and of itself is a natural phenomenon. It is a thing that takes place, and we're very dogmatic about it now. That when you go to sleep, at a certain stage of sleep, you move out of your body.
Uh-huh.
And when we perform this in slow motion, as it were, as a falling asleep process, you, quote, fall out of your body.
Mm-hmm.
And so, therefore, part of it is simply remembering. And once you recognize it to be a natural technique, a natural condition.
Mm-hmm. And the transition from meditation into it and through the various steps of it would be natural transition?
Yes, but indeed.
I see. Okay,
All right, Barb.
I have just a little bit more.
Well, make it quick, because there's so many that want to talk about.
Regarding the business about possession, about bodies, entities moving into the body when one is out of the body.
Yes.
I believe very much that throwing light on anything would help dispel fear so much, and I have talked to so many people, myself included, that have been very fearful for that reason. There is no fear, as far as you're concerned, with any entity that might be kind of in the vicinity of your body, coming into your body while you're out of it?
Obviously, in the very early stages, and we're talking some 20 years ago, I encountered such types of events, and I had obviously such kinds of fears. In these interim 20 years, all I can tell you is that in a simple cause and effect type of exercise, research, there are systems that will let this drop away completely from any theory or any possibility. And a lot of people feel that, oh, this is a dangerous thing that might happen. It cannot happen if you take certain, and I don't use the word precaution. It's not that at all. It's just a state, a mental state that you get into that you know, and then you have no problem.
You're wonderful. Thank you.
Mm.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you, Barbara.
Goodbye.
You're on Open Mind tonight. I'm Bill Jenkins with Robert Monroe. We're talking about the out-of-body experience. Don?
Yes.
All right, you're on.
Good evening. I just should tell you, Bill, that I have never had an experience either, and I've been trying to have an experience for about 2 years now.
Well, maybe we'll find out a way tonight that we can do that.
I hope so. The big thing that I wanted to ask Mr. Monroe is there some steps that you can take to get started on your own, and is it safe to be on your own to start out doing something like this?
The best answer I can give you is some stuff you can take. If you talk about chemicals or drugs, no, there is nothing that...
No, I mean something in the way of meditation, which I've tried.
There are states or things that you can do, and meditation is one of them. There are other types of... one of the best ways that you can do it is get as completely isolated as you can. In other words, I have to get into the description of processes that we use in order to help you a little bit. Whenever Bill feels that's the time to do it, I will.
Okay, we'll try to get into that during the next hour. We're about to wrap this hour up, Don.
Okay.
However, I just found out that there will be some workshops from the Monroe Institute available March and April here, and we'll try to keep you posted on those things, and if we can get some firm dates for you, we certainly will.
Okay.
Appreciate your call, Don.
Thank you very much.
And this first hour has flown by. Are you still awake and with us out there in Virginia, Bob?
More or less.
We're going to take a break for ABC News. So that'll give you 5 minutes.
Bill?
All right, we've got somebody on the line. I believe that's...
Bill?
Yes.
It's Helen.
Hello, Helen. Helen, I want you to sit still there. I got to go find Bob.
Now, do you hear me now?
There we are.
Oh, you had a big fat dial tone going in there.
I heard that.
Yeah.
Here, we've got the most sophisticated phone system in the communications industry at work for us, Bob, but what we have are the most unsophisticated fingers of Bill Jenkins that ever happened at a radio station.
Sounds very familiar.
I have a quick question before we get to Helen's here. Is there any kind of scientific data or proof that all of this is actually happening with you and those people in the Institute and the researchers that you have gone along with?
One of the biggest problems is that you cannot measure the fire. You can only measure the smoke, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that biomonitoring as such is the only tool of measurement that one can really use. There have been a number of different types of... field effect analyzers and things like that, and they still don't give science the proof that it demands that this truly exists. We can show changes in EEG patterns in the brain. We can show difference in all types of physiological responses, but they don't actually define, other than in a repeatable form, these same physiological states, but they don't say, oh, this is the out-of-body state.
Well, what about some information retrieval evidence?
You can do this, and it varies. There are varying degrees of success in it, but that again, could be a thing almost labeled remote viewing, as it were,
mm-hmm.
Which is something we perceive as different than the out-of-body state.
Remote viewing is quite different. Professor Johns and his group at Princeton University are doing a lot of work in that.
The difference being, for example, and we use our classic form, if you can affect the environment in which you visit, somehow, this then, in and of itself, it does indicate something other than remote viewing. The illustration, which is, again, has been done, is to get in and affect electronic circuitry. That has been done in the out-of-body state. The most classic one that we use is to affect a human being, because you can affect animals, but a human being can respond much more specifically. And one of our fondest techniques is to give somebody a pinch, as it were, and do not indicate where you're going to pinch them, and then verify. It's very, very effective.
Hmm. All right. The scientists, of course, are going to have to deal more and more with this.
So the problem, you see, is a system of measurement. You're trying to measure another energy state, another form of energy that is not measurable by the means, either mechanical or electromechanical means, that are the basis of most of our measurement systems, or electromagnetic or hard radiation. It's a different type of energy being used. The problem is that we do not have instrumentation that will systematically do this kind of measurement.
Well, those in your group that you're working with, have you ever found a use for this human phenomena or this natural state of the human that we're just now finding out that, for instance, law enforcement could use, perhaps?
Yes. We get into applications, as it were, but we're not We're not into that application. And I don't have any real answer why we have not. It's simply that it hasn't fallen our way. We've gotten so much involved in the semantic process and its applications that because it is working with consciousness, and this is where we are, is working with consciousness and changes within that consciousness. And this is why I guess we've gotten somewhat diverted into that instead of using the out-of-body state, say, for law enforcement.
I think that there are groups that are involved in this that are actively using it in law enforcement, and there are law enforcement organizations, not both on the federal, state, and local levels, that have no qualms about going to the out-of-body travelers.
Yes, I'm quite sure. We just haven't done it. We've become so involved and being used with our hemispheric synchronization process that, and its application, and I sound like I'm repeating, which I probably am. But I'm sure that your audience knows all about right and left brain. And,
they've been with me for a while. They've learned about it.
The difference is here that we use a series of audio or sound pulses to create a coherent brain activity. And coherent means that it is a simultaneous action of both hemispheres. Ordinarily, one in mentation in daily life, they use an either-or process. It's either a left brain or a right brain function, and it can flicker back and forth. Item one is either two sides of a coin. You can use this system to go to sleep very easily, for example, or you can use it to stay awake. You can use it to, let's say, focus your attention, or you can use it to simply relax. You can use it to explore any form of various levels of consciousness. You can get back all the way into your various internal non-conscious systems, or systems that are not ordinarily aware, available to your beta consciousness. This will let you get into those, and this, as a result, lets you perform things that you couldn't ordinarily do. I think that's the best way to put it. And it also, of course, the high end of it is that by using this in various combinations, one that can get into this out-of-body state, or simply explore and be into other states of consciousness as against this time-space physical matter consciousness.
Well, we know well that if you can balance your left and right brain and bring to bear your full faculties, as it were, you become far more creative than you could in any other way. As far as this pure creativity is concerned, you probably will be far more healthy and in a better state of health.
And you see, the uniqueness, again, is that I'm not an either-or process, but a simultaneous process. We have yet to complete, by far, the potentials that exist in this coherent brain pattern. It becomes tremendously exciting because of the fact that one can, say a college student can use this in a form of concentration and retaining material and get a 4-point average in school. You can run from a 1.5 to a 4-point in one semester.
You mentioned tapes, Bob. Are those available to the public? Or?
Some of them are, yes. Again, if one writes this, they can find what they are. We even have utilizing the hemispheric process, we have a tape that you can shave 5 points off your golf score. Very effectively.
Very good.
And it is the ability to, again, get an encoding that works throughout your mental physical system instead of just one part of it.
Tommy Lasorda is hearing the show. He may want to send some tapes down to the Dodgers there at Vero Beach to shave with them. Get a few more home runs this year.
Incidentally, while we're digressing and not talking, there's what appears to us a very interesting article in the current issue of Mother Earth News about some of our work, and we think it's worthwhile reading.
Well, Helen has been standing by here. She wants to talk about the Black Tunnel. Helen, I want you to stand by just a few more moments, and we'll be right back to you.
Okay, welcome home.
Well, I'm back.
Hope you had a nice vacation.
I certainly did.
Good. I'd like to address a question to Mr. Monroe with regarding to having a floating feeling, and you wake up in a hospital, and you're stuck in a Black Tunnel, and just above your head is a white light. And I know when I go to that white light, I'm going to wake up on the other side. I can hear the doctors talking to him, talking and everything else. And I think, oh, dear God, please don't do that. I'm going to go through the white light. And I'm just wondering if Mr. Monroe has ever come across any other cases like this.
Sounds familiar.
It does?
I didn't hear the last part of it.
Well, she was wondering, she had what it sounded like as a near-death experience there, where she was in a black tunnel, saw a white line at the end. She could hear the doctors talking when she was in the hospital, and she didn't want to go.
Well, that's, this is a, we synthesize that experience a great deal. And so it's very common to us. We have means by which you learn how to go through that tunnel. And the best way I can describe it is say that as you are now, you are in a clearing, and here's a dark forest, as it were, and an unknown forest to you. And so what we do, we established a guidepost into that forest deep enough so that you can go back and forth from the clearing, say, to that point in the forest, so it becomes very, very natural for you. You have no fears about it at all. And then we establish another guidepost, as it were, further in. And that you can see the first guidepost from the second, as it were. And so you have a feeling of complete comfort of doing this. And this going through the tunnel is merely, from our point of view, setting up a series of guideposts that you can get from one to the other and feel comfortable about it. So therefore, then you do get into the light on the other side, as it were. On the, at the end of the tunnel, and then that's when, from our point of view, that's when the action starts.
Well, I have been pronounced clinically dead twice, and it was so beautiful over there, I didn't want to come back.
Well, you'd be surprised. Under the type of state that we speak of, if you don't want to come back, well, someone kind of gently escorts you back.
Oh, yes. I was slightly informed that to come back, and I woke up. And I was gone for all the first time, I was gone for 6 hours. The second time, I was gone for 8 hours. And it was so beautiful on the other side and so peaceful. I just didn't want to come back, period.
Well, it seems to be the...
But in the interim, I've been in the black tunnel so many times. It's unbelievable.
Sort of a classic experience there, the near-death experience. Okay. Does that help you? We got a lot of calls to go here, huh?
Okay, Derwin. Well, God bless, and thanks very much.
All right. Thank
Bye-bye.
You very much. All right, Helen, we hear that over and over, what she goes through there. We're 23 minutes past 11 o'clock on a Saturday night. I'm Bill Jenkins with Robert A. Monroe on Open Mind, and I believe we have Bob on the line. Bob, welcome aboard.
Hi, how you doing?
All right.
I'm from Newport News, Virginia, Robert.
Hi, that's very good.
I lived in Falls Church, Virginia, up to 1969.
Yes.
What's on your mind tonight there?
Okay, I have a story. It's really wild, but it's true.
Okay.
When I lived in Falls Church, Virginia for 2 years, my brother was in the Vietnam War, and...
Can you speak up, Bob?
Okay. My brother, I lived up in Falls Church, Virginia for 2 years, and my brother was in Vietnam, and I had only one brother, and we moved from Falls Church, Virginia to Tustin, California. And he was wounded, and we moved out here to California, and we made a resident in Tustin, California.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a UFO sighting in Falls Church just before we moved out here, me and two other friends of mine. And when we moved to Falls Church, one afternoon, I'm trying to make this very short.
Please.
One afternoon, I went upstairs. We had a split-level apartment. And I went up to my room one afternoon. No one was home. And I laid in my bed, and I put on my stereo. It went off. And I went to sleep. And I woke up because there was something in my room, and there was a small being standing in front of my bed. And I woke up on my elbows, and I looked at this thing, and he smiled at me. He was... a red bean, and he looked at me, and I looked at him on my elbows as I'm looking at him, and as I opened my mouth ready to say something, he went around the side of my bed, and I followed him with my eyes, and we looked at each other. I got ready to scream, and he touched my arm, and my body felt like when your leg goes to sleep, and it went kind of numb, and I woke up at that same instant. and I was numb. The being was about three and a half to four feet tall. He was red, and he had a smile.
Did he go away?
He went away when I woke up, but he was there.
Are you wondering whether it was a dream experience or something you actually...
Exactly. I'm trying to explain it exactly as it happened.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find out. I know it wasn't a dream because it happened, and it was too real. And I'm wondering if he heard anything like this before.
Okay, Bob?
It's very hard to define. We have heard things similar to that, and it's very hard to identify them just from the information that you provided, Bob. Hard to say. At least you are now to a point anywhere where you consider this being a reality and then something other than just a dream. And one way you can find out a lot more about it is simply lie back and become relaxed. If you were a meditator, you could do that. And then reach back and remember that, track back to that event, and gather in more details to sort of mentally relive it. And you may be able to recreate it. That may tell you a great deal about it.
A little bit of hypnotic regression on yourself, as it were.
That's one way of calling it. You can call it that. It's sort of a... what we call a recall.
Well, to me, this really happened. I told my wife that I just married 6 months ago, and my mom and my dad, because my mom came home that afternoon with the groceries, and I ran downstairs and I told her about this. And to me, this really happened, and I've tried to explain to certain people, you know, close friends.
Why don't you try what Bob suggested there, Bob, and that would be to get back in a meditative state if you can and recall as more information about it. Just drag that up out of your own memory as much as possible and make sure to yourself. That's about the best we can come up with for you here.
I'm 30 years old. This happened when I was 17.
I can imagine. It is kind of a traumatic thing. I'm going to have to let you go now, Bob, because we've got so many other callers, but we appreciate you sharing that with us.
Okay, I've enjoyed your show.
Thank you.
Thank you, too.
I'm Bill Jenkins, and with me is Robert A. Monroe, the Monroe Institute. We're talking about the out-of-body experience, and occasionally we get into UFOs and things. Okay, we have Joe on the line. Hi, Joe.
Oh, Bob, I've come across, in my experiences, that this country is being overrun by KGB projectionists. They're all through Washington. They're at every major research center in the United States, and no one's doing anything to protect the situation. World War III is already being fought on a mental projection level, and the Russians are ahead and winning until we put some money in the right place and some right people in the right place to stop what they are doing in eavesdropping to their astral bodies and picking up on every major political figure in the United States and every major institute with their secret research information going on.
Joe, where do you get your information?
Where does Bob get his? You go out of your body and you look for yourself, Bob.
No, I mean, you were saying some definite things there. I've heard
Absolutely.
Them before. But
because astral projection is a very definite thing.
I was just wondering if you had some research on that, or you had...
I'm researching it.
Yeah, you were researching it.
That's right.
Okay.
I'm my own private institute.
All right.
I have no outside research funds. I don't request any. I don't need any. And that's what's happening to this country. And this country is being taxed by the government, and the government is not protecting the people of this country.
All right. Bob, do you have any...
The only thing I could say is that... it's that somewhere in the not too distant future, I think you might look for a Sputnik type of event, which shook the United States up so much back in the 40s, wherever it was.
58.
Which in turn caused us to take a gigantic leap into space. We suspect, and I'll put that the best, the strongest that I can make it, that somewhere within the next 3 years, a Sputnik-type event will take place, let's say, that the Soviets cannot hide, which will in turn act as a sledgehammer that will attract attention here in the United States.
Well, we do know that the Soviets are seemingly far advanced to our research in the matter of utilizing psychic abilities of the human being as well as these other abilities. And, Joe just may very well be on target. We've had that on this program before, and I've heard other things.
Yes.
They are doing a great deal of work in that area where the Pentagon seems to not believe that anybody can go out of body, and so how could they be useful?
Well, look for such an event, and that will change national opinion, including the government and everyone else.
Because the government has to become more spiritual and mental instead of becoming physical and diabolical and want to kill and tax. It has to be want to be creative and positive on a higher level. And until it comes in contact with the higher world, it's going in the wrong direction with its weapons of murder instead of its weapons of creation. And astral projection is a weapon, and a definite intelligence medium of gathering information, just like our U2s were.
Well, we know that the CIA, for instance, uses astral projectionists.
Yeah, they better get more, and they better get more confident people that are doing it, and they better start controlling their diets and their whole complete life, and better get higher beings in there to do the work because they're incompetent.
Well, there's a lot of them that are working on it that are pretty well down the line, but I agree with you, we need more of them doing it.
And you know the brainwave frequency the Russians are working on, they're broadcasting that those big antennas they put down in Cuba, that's to go out in the nine cycles per second frequency to project into Mexico and into the United States.
Anywhere between 8 and 10, and they already are powering it into the western part of the United States.
That's right.
Okay, Joe.
You know what's going on, Bill.
Sure do.
Okay.
Thank you very
much,
Joe. Appreciate the call.
Bye.
You're on a Saturday night. It's Open Mind. I'm Bill Jenkins. And with me is Robert A. Monroe. We're talking about the out-of-body experience. We just got into the ELF frequencies there just a little bit with Joe. But we'll have some other things for you in just a moment.
Yeah.
Yes.
You mean, have you, actually?
We've conducted experiments. One of our favorite ones is to go back and have various people go back and piggyback themselves when they were, say, 4 or 5 years old. And it is a piggyback. It's not assuming the personality that you have when you were 4 or 5 years old, but to go back and piggyback it. And it's most, most fascinating to see it take place. And to experience it is quite a thing. That's the easiest form of working in time. We have a time experiment where we have a consciousness state we call Focus 15, which is a state of no time. And it's like the being at the hub of a wheel, and the time is the rim of the wheel. And you can go out, say you come into that from the spoke in, say, February of 83. And then you can rotate around, say, being at the hub of the wheel. You can rotate backwards or forwards and then move back into time. And it's most fascinating to do.
I mean, let me get you on that one, because that's a new one for me, Bob. You can actually then go out of body and then go back in time and be with yourself, as it were, at some period in the past.
Yes.
That should be quite a fascinating experience.
It is very fascinating, because you get so amused at some of your own activities as, say, a four-year-old child. And we've had a lot of philosophic questions about such activities, and we have not. We go as observers rather than participants, as it were.
Well, that would seems to be like would be a great form of research to clear up perhaps some vague moments in history. Just go back and relive them.
I suspect that it can be done. Yes,
it can be.
Okay. Yeah. My other question was, what happens to your body when you leave it? Like. What happens? Just
what happens to one's body when one leaves it?
Yeah.
It drops into, if you move, it's in direct, the inverse square laws in effect, more or less. The closer you are to the body, the more you respond. And closer means in phase with it, is a better word. The more your physical body responds to what you do in the out-of-body state. The more you go out of phase, your body becomes more comatose. Your breathing becomes very shallow. Your blood pressure drops and stays at a lower level.
Oh, I see.
And your temperature drops, and your body temperature, all your body functions drop down, very similar to delta sleep.
Okay, I have one more question.
Grayson, I want you to make it real fast.
Okay, how do you do this? How do you leave your body?
How do we do this?
Yeah.
How do I do it, or how do we do it in our research?
We're all taking notes now.
Well, once I've gotten lazy, as a matter of fact, I used to go through all sorts of fancy rituals. My typical activity now takes place somewhere during the night, when I will go through a couple sleep cycles, as it were, and I wake up, and there I am totally awake and completely relaxed and very much refreshed. It's absurdly easy for me, anyway, at that state, to simply, it's like unhooking. And there I simply am drifting free, and I do mean to say drifting very slowly and easily. And it's so easy that I don't bother to fool with it any other time. And at that point, the whole my activity has changed radically in the last, seven or eight years. About 7 or 8 years ago, I decided that this consciousness in my own self, it didn't have the knowledge to do the things that might be possible in the out-of-body state. So at that, say, 3 o'clock in the morning, I in turn would simply turn the activities over to my total self. And what that means is has many generic modes. And that's when the real excitement began for me, was when I began to do that.
Okay,
Grayson.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. The question brought up something that was fascinating to me, that you can travel in time. What about traveling into the future, Bob?
Yes.
Well, what about it?
Have you ever done that?
I have, and others. We do this quite consistently. We have a... that's one of the exercises we perform in our Gateway program, is because there's traveling into the future. It's most fascinating.
What do you find in the future?
Well, what do you want to find?
Well, what's going to happen?
One of the things we determined is that there are certain, definitely there are alternate realities of the future.
I see.
And if you look at what might be the most probable one, that's usually the one that the given future that we observe.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you want to know about it?
Well, let me see.
There's a new world coming, if that's what you want to know.
There is a new world coming.
That's right.
How quickly is it going to get here?
Well, let's put it this way. In about the year 2025, by that time, the whole world pattern will have changed completely into a new world.
And a much better one, I would suspect.
Yes. Yes, better. Certainly different.
We hope that we can avoid some awesome conflicts between these great superpowers of ours. You see that happening?
The ones that we have explored do not, that doesn't show up as such. Man is much more preoccupied with things to bother with things like that.
I should hope so.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Grayson. Good questions. Appreciated them.
Bye.
And before we get to another questioner, we have fascinating young lady who just stepped in here, who will be joining you right after Paul Harvey News at midnight tonight, Barbara Essenson. Barbara?
Thank you. And I'm Mr. Monroe. I'm fascinated by this conversation. I almost feel guilty by having my own guest come on midnight, but not guilty enough to give up my 5 hours. Well, you had a caller minutes ago, I guess perhaps in this hour, who talked about having an out-of-body experience when she was young, when she was 4 or 5 years old. Her mother admonished her, and then she was unable to have it. I had a similar experience, but no one admonished me. I got old enough and admonished myself. When I was 4, 5, and 6 years old, I had a similar experience to what she had, and it seemed perfectly okay. When I got to be 10 and 11 years old, I thought, this is crazy.
You've gone out-of-body too, right?
Now I want to get back into it again, and it's a little bit more difficult.
Let's go together.
Okay, we'll do that. Well, on my show tonight, I'm going to have some in-body experiences. One of my favorite people in the whole world, Ingrid Wilmont, I don't know if you've met her, she also happens to be one of California's best-known restaurant writers. She's going to tell us where to dine elegantly in Southern California for under $10 a dinner. She's a lady that writes the column every year for Los Angeles Magazine, and we're going to get a preview peek on
that. You definitely have to be in-body for that.
Right. Ingrid looks like Zsa Zsa Gabor. She writes like Neil Simon and has a sense of humor of Steve Allen. After we find out where to eat, at 2 o'clock, our guest is going to help us eat well. Dietitian Vicki Evans is going to do something very interesting besides answering all of our questions. She's going to rate the popular diets, the Pritikin diet, the Scarsdale diet, Beverly Hills diet. I'd like to hear what she has to say about the Beverly Hills diet. She also specializes in diets for cancer patients and preventive medicine. So I'm looking forward to a very full morning, and I'm going to get out of here so you can get more questions on this fascinating subject.
Okay, Barbara. Thank you very, very much. It's one of my favorite people. Every other week, Barbara's here, right after the Open Mind show. She gets into so many encouraging kind of things. All right.
Bill, I heard all these talks about nice places to eat and everything. We have been conducting an interesting experiment in terms of the hemisync that might be fascinating. We have, an either-or, and it seems to work quite well, but we can teach a person to maximize the effect of eating, meaning that you maybe get you eat a cup of rice, for example, and you can get 5,000 in caloric value out of it.
Oh, really?
High nutrition. And the other side of that coin is that you can eat all you want, you won't gain a pound.
Oh, I'll bet you we could do a long 2-hour show just on that one by itself. Has that come up in the tapes that you have?
No, we haven't got it out yet, but so there's quite a bit of pressure to get it, as you can get it.
You just got a ton more pressure on that. Let me know about whenever that tape is out, because I know the folks will want to know about it. I don't happen to have the problem myself. I can
at all those fancy restaurants, I can see calories building up and up, and I can also understand the problems with critical diet, too.
Hey, will you keep me up to date on that when you get it out?
I sure will.
And we'll try to get you back on and talk more about that aspect of it. We have, I believe, Phyllis on the line, who has an interesting question for us. Phyllis?
Hi there, Bill. I wanted to ask Bob if he has visited other planets in our solar system, such as Venus, what it's like there, and also if there's a 10th planet out beyond Pluto, and what is Pluto like? And these intelligent beings, what galaxies were they in?
Well, I can give you the best. I can perhaps give you an illustration, and perhaps that would help. Along on one of our explorations, and this is some years back, and I'm talking about 7 years ago at least, we had a team go out, and they came praying in their reporting and saying, we found it, and we found an intelligent being. So we rushed back out and had this team go out. And that's the interesting thing, that, speaking of verification, where you have two people in a team, and they're entirely independent from your laboratory point of view. In other words, they're isolated one from another, and they're reporting identical things, and they're reporting joining each other these same things, and reporting identical events. In this case, this had to be our physicist in this particular exercise, as it were, and he encountered this building, and he finally got into this what appeared to be a building, and here was this a being sitting there, and he finally got the attention of the being, and I'm paraphrasing words, and he of course asked the being, "Where am I?" Which is the first question that they usually ask, and we usually ask, and the being in essence says, "Well, don't you know?" And kind of ends and pause, and the being brings out what appears to be a star map, a huge celestial map, and it was in a form that we don't understand. But anyway, he says, "Now, where did you come from?" And and then points, first of all, says, "Here's where you are," and points to a spiral galaxy and a little point on that, and then says to our explorer, who is a very well-known physicist, Nelly, says, "Now, where on this do you come from?" And the best that our poor physicist could do is to push his head to one side and stick his thumb back over his shoulder and say, "I came from that way."
So you don't know where you are.
That's right.
Is there a 10th planet out there, Robert?
Are there what?
A 10th planet, one beyond Pluto.
I can't give you an answer because we haven't really looked for it. We haven't found the solar system that exciting.
Well, it seems to me that possibly would be true if you're just scooting around from galaxy to galaxy, that the solar system here is this backyard.
Well, that's been our point of view anyway.
All right, Phyllis, does that help you?
Somewhat. I'd like to know if he has a book on some of this information.
Yes, we have. There's a sequel due out this year to Journeys Out of the Body, and it's called Far Journeys.
Far Journeys?
It will contain much of that type of material in it.
Yeah, but it's not out yet, Phyllis, but it will be shortly.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
You're spending Saturday night with Bill Jenkins and Robert Monroe on Open Mind. We're talking about some way-out stuff. Robert?
Well, medium way out anyway.
Medium way out. And we'll be back in just a moment.
Okay. I have a couple quick questions and one a little bit longer question. Okay. When you're out of your body, and you got out of your body, right? Okay. What I'm interested in, can you communicate in some way with people who are presently in their body?
Yes, you can. It's one of the biggest problems in that is that when one is in their consciousness mode in physical matter, as it were, it is much as if they are asleep from the person in the out-of-body state.
So what I'm interested in is if you are out of your body, can you talk to somebody who is, sitting there in their body? Can you talk?
Oh, you can.
Okay.
If you
I have a second question. Can you go out of your body at any time?
I probably could, but I'm lazy.
Okay, but there are people who can more or less set a time, an hour from now, they can leave their body? Yes.
Okay,
Mr. Monroe, you are in Virginia, right?
That's true.
Okay, if you set your mind on it, and I think you should have, to prove to a skeptical person like myself, how come you didn't come from Virginia out to Los Angeles to do this interview? I think that would be conclusive proof, and this is, you know, I want an answer on this. I'd really like to know why you didn't come out here and communicate in person with the show.
Why did I come in person?
That's the question, yes, sir.
Do you mean physically?
No. Out of your body, come to Los Angeles and conduct the interview.
Because I would not be able to put I would not be able to vibrate sound enough to get to a microphone there.
The microphone wouldn't pick you up.
That is correct.
You can communicate with somebody. Electronic gear cannot pick this up.
He cannot. That's true.
How come? If the human ear can pick something up, how come electronic gear can't? That doesn't make any sense at all.
Because you're dealing with the electricity, electromagnetism, and things like that, which this is not.
A voice is a voice.
But if I could shout loud enough, yes.
I mean,
sound waves.
No, I mean, a voice is a voice. Electronic gear, all a radio is, or a telephone is, an electronic device. It vibrates sound.
That's right.
Well, the communication that goes on here, Terry, yes. The communication that goes on he's talking about is not a sound wave that happens.
He said he could talk to me.
He said he could communicate with you, Terry.
He said he could talk.
No,
and that was the key to the question.
No,
when he was in his spirit, when he was out of his body. See, I'm a very skeptical person, and I really find this hard to believe.
Well, Terry,
yeah.
I think you misunderstood what he had to say there. He can't, whenever he's out of body and say in your presence, I don't think he's going to be able to talk in your ear very well. There is a form of communication that goes on, but it is not at that plane, that level.
It's a type of
psychic communication, if you understand what that is, and these microphones just won't pick it up.
Well, can I see him?
Under certain conditions, yes.
Well, what conditions?
You would have to be a little bit less of left brain than you are now, first of all.
Left brain?
In other words, you'd have to be in a more relaxed state. That's basically, first of all.
Okay, well, if the ideal conditions with somebody other than me, that they could see you, well, but how could I talk to you when you're out of your body?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I could talk to you, but you can't talk to me?
Yeah, but you're not talking to me with your vocal cords. You're talking to me with a certain part of your energy system that is attached to your brain, if you want to put it that way, or is radiated from your brain.
Oh.
Mind energy.
Okay, well, whatever.
Okay, Terry?
Okay, thank you very much.
Right, thank you there.
Bye.
Well, Terry is trying in there, Bob. Anyway, to get something going. You're on KABC with Bill Jenkins and Bob Monroe. We're talking about the out-of-body travel. It's 6 minutes away from midnight, and we have Jim on the line.
Good evening.
Yeah.
I enjoy your show, as always, and I wanted to ask just one question.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I've read your book, and I found it very interesting, and I think it was an important book. I also found the research of Dr. James Donahoe also very interesting. My question involves, okay, I want to start out by saying that I'm not a skeptic in the sense that I personally can accept the phenomena as being real, okay? But I have a question that deals with the problem of proof that you alluded to earlier and a resultant assumption or leap of logic that is often made. And I just have one question. Now, many times when people deal with the phenomenon of near-death experience, they make a leap of logic and they say, and therefore this proves life after death. Now, I know that's not completely analogous. However, there's a slight analogy in that many of the researchers, with the exception of maybe Dr. Donahoe, take that same line of reasoning. They say I'll start my question this way. Assuming that it can be demonstrated, for the sake of argument, let's say that it can be demonstrated or can be accepted or proved that you can go a distance with a non-physical means like
we've been talking about.
Right, like some of the research by Dr., I think his name is Tanos, some of these other things. Let's say it can be demonstrated. My question is this. How can you go a step further and say, therefore, we can make a further extrapolation that there is life after death? That is to say, isn't it possible that you can go remote distances while you are alive, but once you are dead, then, in other words, how can you make this extra leap of faith and say, and therefore it proves there's a life after death? That's my question.
I'll just give you a quick answer to how we...
But I'm very serious about this.
A very quick answer. We occasionally work with terminal cases, the people who have a scheduled death time, as it were. And our price for doing this and working with them so that they can, as it were, establish a beachhead where they're going. Our price, or our pay for this, is that they come back and let us know how it works. And they do.
Okay, Jim.
I guess they answered my question.
Yeah, it sure does.
Okay, thank you.
All right. I think we have time for maybe one more call before all is said and done. And I believe we have Greg on the line, and that may follow in line. Greg, what's on your mind here?
Well, I just wanted to ask Robert a quick question. What his views of religion are, how he accepts different religions that are brought to him.
What I do, Bill, do I tell it the way it is?
Or... Yeah, tell him the way it is.
we have descriptions, and I've used it, I think, once. We have what we call local traffic, and which is a very mixed-up jumble, as it might be, say, in downtown Los Angeles. And we have what we call going interstate, which is a nice, smooth way, and the rules and perceptions are entirely different. From the perspective, and quite honestly, as we see it from our point of view, that all of the religious concepts that we have here as man are simply local traffic.
Okay, Greg?
That's very interesting.
Kind of local traffic.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, that about wraps it up. We don't have time to get to any more callers, but I do want to take time, Robert, to thank you for staying up on an early Sunday morning there in Virginia.
Well, it's my pleasure. We have a nice free moon outside tonight.
Well, you have given us two fascinating hours tonight, and I have thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed them. The workshops, I hope, will soon come to being out here in Los Angeles, where a lot of these folks can get into the Monroe Institute workshops and find out more about this and what it can mean to their lives.
I just have them write it, that's all.
Just write you?
Yeah, just the address that I gave.
And you'll get back to them with the information. And there are dates available, and they'll get that from you also.
That's true.
Okay, Bob. Thank you very, very much for being with us, and let's do it again.
I will, Bill.
All right.
Night.
Night. And we'll see all of you next week. See you then.